Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 266. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Dr. Dre Elliott.
I'm apparently doing some sort of techno dance here.
That's right.
The robot.
Right. That's
doing the robot now.
Mr. Graham Thickens.
And I'm not dancing, but I am happy to be here.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Great.
Awesome.
You know, it's been a while since we've had one of our casts.
Well, it's been a while since we've had a cast with the whole cast.
Yeah, so that's true.
We last week off for Memorial Day because, you know, we all had gardening to do.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't around the week before that, right? But you had Julio on and Graham and
Tim was busy that weekend.
Yeah. But we're all together now, and isn't that what matters?
Oh, isn't it? Isn't it just special?
It's so great.
It's so special. It's so special. So, besides going up north a lot and going to the hinterlands for art shows and things like that, Graham managed to get out to GlueCon.
Yeah, let's hear about GlueCon, buddy.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was an amazing conference in Denver. I was there the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, because there was a pre-event as well on API strategy and practice, kind of an unconference, bar camp kind of a thing. And then the two-day conference that attracted about 650 developers, a very good conference. Everybody loved it. Amazing amount of people were there for the first time. It's been going on 6 years. I've been to all six of them. And I'd say out of the 650, it looked like more than half of the people hadn't been there before. So it's definitely drawing people on the topics of APIs and DevOps were the sort of two key developer-oriented themes underlying the event. And, you know, there wasn't much Minnesota representation this time, which was too bad because we've had as many as 6, 8, maybe 10 people there from Minnesota in the past, but it seemed to me like when I first got there, I think it was just myself and Donnie Burkholz, who was a speaker, who did great, by the way. So, and I mean, this guy is a treasure to have here in Minnesota, even though he's on the road most of the time at conferences. He is based here in Eden Prairie, but D. Burkholz on Twitter, you know, he's an analyst for RedMonk, so he's all about open source software and cloud and DevOps and all of the above. And he and I thought were the only ones there, but then he told me, I guess there was some employee from Instratus who also showed up. I didn't know who that was, but. And then there was another guy, James Urquhart, who's a Bay Area Instratus executive, who's now with Dell, of course, and is still based in the Bay Area. So he's got a bit of a Minnesota connection. But anyway, for all you developers and CTOs and software architects and API developers who weren't there, you really missed a good one. You can try to follow the hashtag and read all about it. It was a very busy hashtag. I wrote a ton of stories for Programmable Web, which is the first time I've contributed to that site. The reason I did that is, you know, I've become determined I'm going to quit spending my own money to go to these things. And it's like, I'm going to get somebody to hire me to pay me to write when I'm at these things, you know, absorbing all this fire hose of content. And by God, I was able to connect with a guy I've known way, way back, not known well, but David Berlind, who's been an editor with, I think, eWeek, or I can't even remember all the tech publications he's been. He's now the editor-in-chief of Programmable Web based out of San Francisco, and I was able to connect with their editorial people, and I just kept writing, and there were so many things to cover, and I ended up doing 7 stories. I've never worked so hard at a conference. You know, I was just, you know, under the gun trying to write up one good story after another. And, you know, it's hard to really enjoy the conference when you're cramming,
well,
you know.
No, Graham, it's hard to hold your recorder and maybe a pen and a beer.
Yeah,
simultaneously.
Right. Struggling that beer. So that's
yeah, and, you know, I didn't even do many. I mean, I've done a lot of video interviews at these kinds of conferences before, but I didn't have time to really do many of those. I did one of a CTO from Strong Loop, but which didn't turn out very well because I didn't have my damn mic with me. But other than that, I was just writing and filing stories, and I'll put the link in the show notes. Excellent event, and you know, it's amazing how the API economy is just growing so strong. And you know, there was another event in San Francisco this week that followed Glue called APIcon, a first-year event which Programmable Web put on.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a ton going on in that space.
Well, you know what's interesting about this whole thing is, I don't know about you guys, but the first exposure I had to Programmable Web was an article by Richard McManus and Read Write Web, who wrote about this Chicago mashup that had, because that was how they positioned Programmable Web at the beginning, was that it was this sort of mashup site. And and remember that Chicago map where they took the police data and then mapped crimes and so on in different neighborhoods, so you could get a sense of what was going on in your own neighborhood. And I haven't paid a lot of attention, but it looks like they've really repositioned themselves as the API site.
The guy who founded it, John Musser, I know well and interviewed and wrote. He's now got another startup called API Science, but Programmable Web was acquired by Alcatel-Lucent two, 3 years ago, and they ended up selling it to MuleSoft, which is a hot API, you know, infrastructure software firm in San Francisco. So they actually own Programmable Web now. But David Berlin, who is a highly competent, experienced technology editorial director, is doing a great job, you know, upgrading the site and running it as an independent entity.
What a great name, MuleSoft. Unbelievable.
Did we lose Graham?
I think we did. Hopefully he'll call back in. But that's probably a good segue.
I guess now's as good a time as any
move
on to another topic. But
we'll talk about Tim's favorite topic. All he wants to do is talk about Target.
Target.
Yeah. So
new digital advisory council.
Yeah. No, this is good news. They're really moving ahead with their online and mobile efforts there. So they've got a new advisory council. So I think that's a good move for them.
And a nice result is hiring about 50 software engineers.
So yeah,
that'll be nice.
Yeah. No, they're really trying to pivot into mobile, and they've done some great work there with the Cartwheel. I saw they had 7 million users now, which is a lot for a retailer's app. And so that seems to be going very well. So they're going to accelerate that.
So there you go.
So there you go on that. But there's more.
No. Wait. I know you had noted here a couple different things. So
there's more. The ebook thing that I guess I didn't put it in, but I guess it was Steve.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
They're doing this deal with Librify, which I've never heard of, which I guess is a subscription service for ebooks.
Yep.
So this is sort of like the Target Ticket, but for ebooks, to kind of take their book club from printed books to ebooks. So I guess it sounds like a good deal, but if you're going to do this, if you're a serious reader, I would think you would you know, get Amazon Prime and get their lending library for free, and then, you know, discounts on regular ebooks through Amazon, but maybe not. Maybe this has a niche that will you know, fulfill a lot of people. There wasn't a lot of information in this piece on you know, kind of what ebooks readers does it support and all that stuff, but I imagine it would be all the tablets and regular dedicated readers.
Yeah.
Hello.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Graham's back.
Graham's back. We were what happened? Sick. Your mother and I were up worrying about you.
No, you just dropped off.
Weird. I got no signal of that, but
it was the podcast god saying, wrap it up.
Yeah. That's it. We're done with Glucon. Okay, let's move on.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But you know, Target Ticket is, I guess, has been a success. So you know, I was kind of skeptical at that time. So so maybe this ebook thing will be a similar success.
Well, yeah, I, you know, define success though. I mean, it's I guess it's a success from what standpoint? Yeah.
Well, I guess it's
they had nothing and they have going now have zero. More.
Yeah, because they sell books right now, and printed books are going out of fashion. And you know, at some point, they will have zero books, just like they will have zero DVDs and Blu-rays in their stores. Yeah. So they've got to have something digital when that transition happens.
Well, I have to be amazed. I don't know about you guys, but I used to go in and troll through the Blu-ray discs, and I don't think I've purchased a Blu-ray disc now for almost a year. And that's really unusual for me because I'm really aware of the quality difference between a streamed movie and a Blu-ray movie. And there are some, obviously, that I want to own because I know I'm going to watch them more than once. But, you know, if it's some latest movie, I'd rather spend $5 and rent it and be done with it.
$5? Where do you rent them for $5?
Well, through the iTunes store. I mean, it depends on what the movie is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wait for till they're at Redbox, and it's like, what, $1.50 for the Blu-ray?
$1.59, I think.
Yeah. Like they don't have everything, though. They only have, like, the latest, greatest, top
right,
ones.
Right.
Yeah. But
sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to wait a long time for movies.
That is correct.
A long time.
Well, and then the other thing they're doing is they're rolling out online same-day delivery in Minneapolis. I'm sure it's a test.
It's a test, yeah. It was like three markets, Miami and Boston and Minneapolis.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you feel like you need this? I mean, there's a Target that's a, you know, 8-minute drive from my house, so.
Well, but they you know? You know, one of the things that I've noticed about Target is, and it's not just the store in Eden Prairie, it's several other stores that we've been to, is the out-of-stocks seem to be accelerating. And so you'll go in and you'll say, well, I want to buy, you know, X, whatever the product is. And if it's at all popular, it's often out of stock. And it happens over and over and over again. So, you know, if there's something that you really needed, you know, like a new released product or something, you could order it online and then go pick it up in Maple Grove or whatever. So that could be an advantage. So why not tie in store inventory to your online ordering? I mean, it just makes total sense.
Yeah, Best Buy has done this quite successfully.
Yes.
And I found that the last several products that I bought at Best Buy, this is how I bought them. As I've
so did I.
Yeah. I heard about it on Gizmodo or something, you know, where their deal thing every day. So I hear about the deal, I go to their website, I order it, and then I have it shipped to my local store, and that's where I go pick it up.
Yep. Well, when you buy me presents, then just have them make sure they're at the Eden Prairie store, and I'll just run up and pick.
Sure. Them. Anything for you, Steve.
Yeah, but you have to stand behind those guys returning stuff and.
No. I don't think so.
No, you have your own. You have your own place now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like
that's a great store, but
forget what they call it. Yeah. The Burnsville store down here has its own little desk, and you just go there, and there's usually no one there.
Yep.
So.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, so I was blown away when I saw this story in the Pioneer Press about St. Paul Schools dumping Dell. For student iPads. I thought, oh my gosh, this was a big deal. They had a $4.3 million contract with Dell, and there's 715,000 already into the project, and they're going to switch everything and go iPads.
Yeah, well, every student gets one, right?
Yeah.
They didn't say what they were buying from Dell, but I bet it's, you know, Windows PCs.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because it would make me scratch my head if they were throwing out Dell Chromebooks, because I would think that Chromebooks would be not only a lot cheaper than iPads, but probably better in the long run for students.
Well, because, it looked like
they're more like a laptop than than just a tablet?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think probably it seems like there was, it's hard to say what, you know, what exactly they were building, but because I haven't researched it enough, but it looks like it was more than just, you know, a hardware. It was some software building that was included as well. And I didn't get all the way through the article that it's, did it note if they've lost any money, if they spent any money?
Yeah, they said they were $715,000 already into the project.
Yeah, so that's $715,000 that got pissed away. So.
Well, they used it for a year.
And they'll still, you know, they'll still obviously do stuff with it. But here's something that's interesting is because I have three sister-in-laws who are all teachers, and one's a former teacher, and so there's a lot of excitement and discussion about iPads and all of that, and they're. You know, we're having conversations about it all the time. And what's interesting is the lists I've found for them of education friendly sorts of apps that are really creative apps, you know, for storytelling and presentation assembly and all sorts of things that are really awesome. And I know how hard that has been in the past because my kids, you know, did it. And I'm sure you guys did too, about, you know, how to go about, you know, geez, you got to teach them iMovie or, you know, whatever to be able to figure out how to do all this stuff. And it's just so much easier on an iPad.
Well, there's a lot of potential with the iPads, but it seems like at least here in Lakeville at the elementary school level that they're really not being used for their apps. They're being used as basically web browsers. So you could, you know, get a Chromebook or any kind of, you know, it doesn't have to be an iPad to operate a browser, you know?
Yeah, and in actuality, I'm on the Tech Advisory Council for Lakeville Public Schools, and in reality, they have a very large stock of Chromebooks as well. So it's not it's not just iPads. You know, as much as we all love the iPad platform, Apple just does not work with schools well as far as giving, you know, discounts. It's still it's not cost effective necessarily. To work with Apple. I think it's superior products, but again, it's just not cost effective for districts of that size. So we've done a lot of Chromebooks and iPads.
Yeah, no, I think it's a missed opportunity that they're not using apps, you know, an app centric approach to the deployment. It started out that way, but in the 3 years that it's been out, or maybe it's 2 years, I forgot. It just seems like it's going back. It's, you know, it's not really realizing its potential.
Well, I think it's very much in its early stages, Tim. I mean, I sit on that council and get updated every month, and yeah, there are a lot of apps that are being used, Schoolology and things like that, throughout the district. And there's a new effort underway, which is being dubbed iLearn 2.0, which is a rollout of a BYOD program. So that's a big initiative right now. So it's, you know, trying to shift away from necessarily being the supplier of hardware to access via app integration and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's actually a great deal going on. It's like anything. It's like kind of turning a battleship in a bathtub, because there's all the infrastructure that has to kind of build along with it. But it's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, I'm always very concerned about making sure that you integrate technology within the education process. You don't use technology to replace the current education process. Meaning, I think that I've always believed that there's a responsibility by school systems to precipitate the social aspects, the artistic aspects and things like that. You know, and I think you'll see that here in Lakeville for sure, because there's a shift away from STEM and towards STEAM, which includes the arts, which I think is good. Incredibly important.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I digress. But there are some things going on, and it's just a matter of, you know, teachers learning the opportunities they have in front of them, of what technology is available.
Well, not only that,
and learning that technology, basically.
Yeah, and not only that, but you know, teaching human sexuality is really simple with an internet connected device.
Sponsored by Pornhub. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I wanted to know if you guys, because I just became aware of this new class of device, and
it's
Intel.
Called a phone?
Yeah. Well, no, Intel did this little mini
call the phone.
Intel did this little mini PC called a Nuke or NUC, I guess Nuke, yeah. NUC. And Asus has a new little Chromebox, and there are two other companies that are Lenovo and one other company that's making this size computer, if you will. And they're actually surprisingly powerful. I mean, they've got i3s or i5 chips in them, and so it's kind of interesting as a form factor, but it's not portable. And so I'm wondering what you guys are seeing, or maybe you know, is education strictly going toward portable devices and not and away from lab based desktop stuff?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you're not saying that. For example, I think that at least here, I can speak for here in Lakeville, when Lisa Snyder took over as superintendent, I think the day she took over was the last day you ever saw a computer lab built.
Got it.
So it's all about mobile devices now, and the ability to integrate, you know, from your desk or from your home, or it's there's definitely that trend, Steve.
Okay.
This thing looks like an iMac Mini, Steve.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's sort of like a startup, a play school mini. So,
well, which, yeah. By the way, I'm hoping that it's been like 500 and some days since the Mac Mini's been updated, and I'm hoping they do that.
Yeah, there's talk about that.
Oh,
coming.
Boy, I sure hope so.
Well, that's kind of a nice little segue into WWDC talk, if you want to do that. It's,
well, we're still talking local here.
Yeah, we got to talk local a little bit.
I think you got to understand that there's always this conflict between us that, you know, do we talk about the big stories or do we talk local first? So I tend to go with, you know, everything's local to me. So I say, you know, let's talk about the big stories, but go ahead.
We haven't talked about a Julio story yet.
Oh, so, there you go. See, you got
so here
you
it
gotta
is.
Get Julio in. Yeah. So
that's right. He did a big thing on podcasting, particularly on Tom Bernard.
Yeah, he did. He did one story that had, as Phil pointed out before we started recording, he did one story that was really about the podcast trend, and then led with Tom Bernard.
Was more about Leo Laporte than it was.
It was.
Yeah, well, that was his sidebar. I think this ran in the paper, so that's probably a sidebar to this main story on Tom Bernard.
Yeah, but it was an interesting story on Tom Bernard and his new podcast empire that he's trying to build, and some nice photos. You know, Don Shelby's part of this, and Tommy Mischke, who came from KSTP.
It's just a bunch of old guys doing a podcast.
Yeah, but here, yeah. But here's what's
the nerve of them.
Hey, who's done that?
But here's what's interesting. Right.
That.
Yeah, put yourself in that old guy category.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what's interesting?
That's
about
never
this?
Been done.
What's interesting about this to me is the fact that you would think that the audio quality would be outstanding, and I've listened to several of these shows just because I want to, you know, get a sense of what's going on. And people are talking over each other all the time and you can't tell who's who and what's going on. Plus the audio quality sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blown away. Yeah. I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, but I mean, I'm just thinking, come on, you know, Bernard, you got dough and you know, radio, and you can certainly hire audio engineers. And I know his family is doing things, but I think there's sort of a baseline level that you've got to be at.
I got $10. Steve gets a call from the Bernard podcast folks.
Right.
I know that they need to have Steve on as a guest.
They have mentioned us on one of their tweets. So I think that you'll be getting a call, dude.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
charge them a lot of money for your guidance. Because anybody can stomp out colliding packets, it's you.
Yeah.
There's that hashtag again.
Yeah.
So is Bernard trying to make money at this? Like he needs
absolutely.
More money. I mean, you know. But it is a money making endeavor, huh?
Sure,
yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Well look at what Leo Laporte's done, look at what Adam Carolla has done. You know, he's got a built-in audience.
Look at what we've done, for God's sakes.
You talk about money.
Well, we're rolling in dough.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bernard did slam people that are doing podcasting as a hobby. That that's not the way to do it. So you got to make money. Okay. So it's okay.
God forbid, yeah.
So if anybody wants to, you can send the iTunes gift cards to Phil Wilson, care of. Anyway.
I like doing it for fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
I've got enough money. Well, never. I don't know.
Well, so we got to talk about our pals, SmartThings, because they just updated their mobile app. And
we know they're to tell you. Part of this whole big thing at WWC.
That's
you know
that. Right.
Well,
the big acquisition, the big SmartThings acquisition.
Yeah, we'll see. But what's interesting about it to me is the fact that I actually had to reorient myself, and I had to watch one of the videos to figure out what the hell they'd done and how they'd changed things, because it wasn't necessarily intuitive for me. Maybe it would be for a new user, but I've been at it for a while. And but I do like the fact that they're really pushing hard to A, make it simpler in terms of process, but also B, to add sort of these big categories of convenience or home security or, you know, safety, you know, and so forth. So they're adding these big buckets, but they are really, really pushing hard to this TechCrunch article. I thought was really good. Who put this in here?
I did.
Yeah. I thought this was a good article for them, but what was really funny was I didn't have a chance until last night when I was out walking to listen to MacBreak Weekly. And let me just play you a short snippet of,
back it up. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is a first.
What?
This is a historic piece in Minovate. We are actually going to play a sound bite.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Well, no, we do that with the security tip of the week.
Well,
that's more of a sweeper.
That's more of an imaging piece, you know.
Right.
You know, a showing off our sparing no expense on talent. And this is an actual, ladies and gentlemen, first ever news soundbite.
Here we go.
Yeah. On Minovate. Go ahead, Steve.
All right. Real quick context. They were having a discussion about WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple's holding starting Monday. And, oh, by the way, the keynote will be streamed, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But they were talking about some of the things that Apple was announcing, and one of them is a rumor that was in the Financial Times about Apple coming out with home automation, Internet of Things, and so on. And they sort of put a context and a spin on it. But then Leo Laporte, who runs the network and the shows pretty much, had this to say about our pals at SmartThings.
Google's been rumored. In fact, Google has made products along these lines. Google's bought Nest. So
well, I think
Google's very much planning to be in this space, I'm sure.
I think home automation. I mean, everybody, I know it's for me, I'm waiting.
We're waiting because it's been a flop because there's so many conflicting standards. There's no clear winner.
Exactly. And that's usually where Apple does a pretty good job at capitalizing on that, because there's a lot of iPhone users like me that would love to have my iPhone control when I walk in the door. I want to unlock the doors. I want to have a keyless experience. I want to be able to change my lights. I mean, I want to be able to do all of those things, you know, with my iPhone. I don't want a bunch of different little bits and pieces. And I think that it's a huge opportunity for Apple.
I've been rooting for this SmartThings. But if Apple got into it, that would kind of change the game for them. Unless Apple acquires SmartThings. See, this was a smarter acquisition. Say this is a startup that's focused on, and they already have products. But the idea is focused on, and they were. Here's another thing: they interoperate with existing standards like Zigbee, and so this works with your Wemo, this works with your Hue, this works with your Sonos. I think the idea that one thing that works with everything is a great idea.
Wow, that was longer than a soundbite.
Well, it was a minute and 19 seconds. No, but seriously, I thought that was really, what an incredible plug.
But that's really what, you know, you talk about what is rumored to be Apple's play in the Internet of Things, and it is SmartThings.
It is.
It is SmartThings.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, that's we don't know that for sure yet because it hasn't been announced, but clearly that's what it's looking like. It's going to be SmartThings. So,
How much of the SmartThings secret sauce is in their mobile apps and how much is in their hub?
Well, it's really at the server level because the server works with the hub. So you set things up in the hub, and
so hopefully most of their value is there, because Apple could do a better job at the handset software side of things.
Yeah, well, I think the app is just fine. I mean, it works great. It acts as presence, you know, so you can set up your phone to be a presence device. So when you walk in the house, lights turn on, maybe your Sonos music turns on, you know, yada yada yada. It does all these things for you automatically.
Did you just yada us? Did you just yada
us? I did yada.
He did three times.
Sorry.
Wow.
But anyway, so I thought that, I just thought that was really cool that these guys keep getting a lot of buzz.
I expect you to see a tweet showcasing the fact that we talked about Leo Laporte not once but twice in the podcast today.
Yeah. So, wow. Oh my God, you're right.
Well, I expect you better tweet him so he gives us additional props, because we know he listens to us.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Every week.
I think he was our first subscriber. Back in 2008, he was concerned because he was competing with us.
So is it okay now? Because this is a really good segue into WWDC, and that's coming up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is this would be a good place to talk about that. Is that okay, guys? I know it's not local.
Oh, no.
Why, yes, Phil. Well, because it's gonna matter. I mean, I love the great article find, by the way, Tim, on The Verge about the 13 things to expect from Apple at WWDC. In iOS 8, they've already put banners up. The whole smart homes.
It's going to be the announcement of the acquisition of SmartThings.
Well, I don't think that we'll see 13 things. I think we'll see 3 or 4 at the most.
Yeah, because they're good at focusing. Yeah.
Well, no, it's a developers conference, so I think that it'll be obviously iOS 8 and OS 10.10 will be the focuses.
Should be, anyway.
And then there might be a couple new things, like there could be a smart home initiative, there could be like an update to the Apple TV, stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think
we're going to see a laundry list like they put out here.
Yeah, I think they'll talk about wearable and Beats.
Yeah, well, yeah, because when you look at they could do a whole keynote just on the Internet of Things space, and then they could do one on iOS 8 and then OS 10, because obviously they're coming together. But then you look at this
What do developers need to know about? They need to know about if there's going to be a bigger iPhone. They need to know about that size that they need to target.
Right.
They need to know about the new versions of the operating systems, both mobile and desktop. So those are, I think, the things that we'll see.
Well, and, what about wearables? What about Apple TV?
I don't know. Maybe Apple TV, because that's overdue for an update. I just don't see the wearables doing anything at the developers conference.
I think the wearables kind of the only wearable you'll hear about at this one is probably the Beats thing, and which is a headphone. Yeah. So I just
even though
I think that's a $3 billion. So what? But
get it. I mean, I at the time that we first discussed the rumor, I just didn't get why there was synergy here. So I guess it's from what's come out, it looks like they're getting Jimmy Iovine and his connections in the music industry.
And Beats licensing for streaming. Okay. Because, you know what, buying music is dead.
No, I agree. I agree. And they have to have a streaming service, but Apple could do that. I mean, they don't need to buy someone to get into the streaming music business.
Well, but they tried with the radio and it didn't work.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that was lukewarm reception.
Because nobody wants to give Apple anything, right? So that's why all these all the TV stations are probably not playing ball with Apple on an Apple TV strategy, because they don't want them to become the dominant player like they did with music.
But they sort of saved music though, because everyone would be. I mean, literally everyone would be. Stealing music.
Say, by the way, in the Verge article, my favorite comments when talking about OS 10.10, some guy comments and says, maybe a 10.9999 to fix everything wrong with Mavericks. I just love that.
Do you see that banner? So it looks like it's going to either be Yosemite or El Capitan.
Right.
Because they have a picture of El Capitan there. So I'm sure it will be Yosemite.
Yeah. Well, I heard
it's going to be Yosemite. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they're going to have Yosemite Sam as the mascot.
Oh,
yeah.
Please. Yeah. Yakarn, Sarn, Rabbit.
I know.
Say, you know, on the topic of wearables, there's a great wearables conference going on overlapping next week in San Francisco, put on by Wearable World.
Yep.
My friend Reg Snodgrass, it's called glazed.com. And I think they're talking about, you know, 1,500 people at this thing. So if you're into wearables, be sure to check out that. I don't know if they're live streaming any of it. But
did you look at the schedule? I mean, it's very healthcare centric.
Oh yeah,
with wearables. So
yep, there's a lot going on there, and of course, Apple has certainly made hints in that direction as well. So, but whether or not we hear a lot about wearables from WWDC, there'll be a ton of speakers and news coming out of glazed.com or glazedcon.com, I suppose, is the site for that event.
Yep. Well, I wanted to shift gears mainly because otherwise we're going to run out of time, but I wanted to mention what I thought was the biggest stories or the biggest story over the last week or so. One was the PBS Frontline show called United States of Secrets. And it was the best recap of everything that's been going on relative to, you know, when surveillance really accelerated after 9/11 and all the things that have been going on since and the Edward Snowden revelations and everything else. Really, really a well-done program. So if you haven't seen that, you can see it online, and I put a link in the show notes. And then the next thing was NBC's Brian Williams had an interview with Edward Snowden over in Moscow. And it's one thing to watch the show, but then the hour they did afterwards online only, which was streaming and actually also was very well done, was where I found myself yelling at the TV. Wait, no, ask this. No, that's not how it goes. You know, my wife is like, shut up. But but a really good set of questions and so on. I don't think Brian Williams is tough enough on him really to probe.
It almost seems scripted to me.
It seems a lot of softball questions.
A lot of editing.
The news media can't decide what to do. They can't
Putin edited it. Is that it?
No.
Yeah. No, with no shirt on.
They can't decide how to treat him, whether to treat him as a hero or an outlaw. So they're trying to play it down the middle right now.
I agree.
Jerry says he's got to come back and man up.
Yeah.
Well, he will eventually.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You know, he's a CIA operative, so this is part of the program.
Yeah.
And well, then we got it. Tim, do you believe that he's a CIA operative?
Absolutely. He even said it on the interview.
Well, yeah, he said it, but does that necessarily make it true? I mean, because
no, this is an interagency squabble. The CIA had it in for the NSA, and he was the guy to do it. So they got their interagency justice.
It's a conspiracy wrapped in a conundrum, wrapped in a conspiracy.
No, it's not a conspiracy. It's he said he was trained as an agent.
Well, sure, everybody.
He's a member of the CIA.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, sure. Everybody can say they're a CIA operative.
We know a lot of this stuff is political theater. I mean, what the House of Representatives did for the bill in terms of metadata, they may as well not have done anything because it doesn't do anything.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's all a matter of, well, we got to do something to appease the American people and make them think that we're making it okay. Mm-hmm. But what's fascinating to me is the fact that 95% of all of Snowden's revelations to date have been programs that the slide decks were from like 2008, or the documents were from 2009 or 2010. Well, it's 2014. Do you think they've done anything between then and now?
I don't think they have. I think they stopped.
They just stopped.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I drove by when I was.
They started feeling. They started feeling bad and stopped. Jeez,
what are you smoking over there, Phil?
When I was on my photography adventure last year, I drove by the NSA data center in Utah. Oh my God! You should see this thing. I mean, they're spending $2 billion to build this thing, and it's nothing but storage for all the data they're collecting.
Do they have a data storage tabernacle choir there?
Yeah, probably. God, it's incredible.
So Steve, is it like the scene in Blazing Saddles where they come up to the toll gate?
That is my favorite quote.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to need.
Slim
pickings.
Fill
this place up.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think the Brian Williams interview was, it was a softball thing, but I think really do explore, take a little time with the links. If you haven't already, take a little time with the links and explore the frontline site on some of the stuff that they've done. It is a very comprehensive look, but there's also a lot of other links and other small podcasts and things like that to talk about protecting your data and things like that. There are no security tips of the week from Steve, but there could be.
It looks like there is.
Maybe.
We'll see.
So,
they don't have a flashy intro like we have. So,
I put in the Surface 3 because I thought that we should at least revisit Microsoft's efforts here in the tablet/laptop space.
Yeah.
Everybody's been reviewing it.
Yeah.
Well, this sort of,
reviewing it very well.
Yeah, it appears to be the best one yet, but it's not perfect. It just seems like that this sort of idea of a hybrid where it's a tablet and then it's a full-on laptop has a lot of compromises, but it's got a lot of advantages. So it's like this weird kind of, it's appealing. It's a very appealing sort of form factor because you want, instead of carrying two devices, to carry one. And I'm not sure if they're pulling it off, but they're getting close.
Yeah, yeah.
Will Apple do anything like this? Because that would be really appealing.
It starts butting into the iPad Air or the MacBook Air.
Have a device in between where you could like pull off the screen and it becomes an iPad, and you put it back on the laptop dock or whatever, the keyboard, and it becomes a Mac.
You can get that in peripherals now. I mean, you can get keyboards that snap on.
I know, but it doesn't turn into a Mac when you do that. I want both operating systems.
Well, ask.
I know.
That's what iOS coming together with
OS X.
OS X. Having the two come together. I mean, that's really, if you take a look at Launchpad on OS X.
Yeah, it's an
iOS interface.
Yeah. I don't think they'll ever fully merge them. They'll always have two distinct products. Yeah. I would just like to have that same product in one device.
I think they're exhibiting that they want to at least merge the look and feel. So
no, they're going to get them close, but there'll still be a desktop operating system and there'll still be a mobile. I don't see them doing what Microsoft is attempting to do here where it's the same thing.
I think I hear the beginning of Tim morphing into a Microsoft.
No, not at all.
I think you know, it started with the Chromebook. You know, he moved into the Chromebook, and
I'm more of a Google guy.
Well,
so
I think
Chrome OS.
I think Tim Cook should know we're losing him. We're losing him.
I still use Macs on the desktop.
I just bought 300 shares of Microsoft this past week.
Oh. Did you really?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. And I did it.
Steve, stock tip of the week.
Well, I did it because of the new CEO and some of the moves they're making. They're really getting slammed that he's not moving fast enough and he hasn't announced much and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. Wait a minute. There's a lot going on. And I got to tell you, the stuff that Doug Olson's involved in with Azure, their cloud computing direction,
or Azure, as a lot of people call it.
Yeah, is I have no insider information at all. I wish I did, but
that's why you
bought
the
shares.
Now, hanging out with Microsoft.
Cue the Justice Department.
No,
hello.
No. but in all seriousness, I mean they're making some interesting moves, and it feels like when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, because I was there shortly thereafter, and I remember doing the slide when we hit $6 billion in revenue for the year. And now they do that in, you know, the first month of a quarter. Three weeks of the quarter.
First couple of weeks,
And it feels the same way at Microsoft. It really does.
Did you sell off some Apple stock so you could buy some Microsoft stock?
No, I have too much Apple, so I had sold some maybe 2 months ago.
And diversify,
you know. Oh.
I have to. Well, because if Apple stubs their toe and breaks their nose when they fall, I'm screwed in terms of my IRA.
And the great thing, though, Steve, is Apple stock makes such a wonderful gift.
Yeah. Well, I can't gift any, though, because it's in my IRA.
That's me smiling.
Yeah.
It's up damn near 20% in a little over 6 weeks since they reported their last quarterly results. Apple. Yeah. Apple is up something like 18%.
See,
in a month or more.
You see, Graham is a fanboy. You wouldn't see him ever buying Microsoft stock.
No.
Well,
no,
neither.
Not going to happen.
I would never have bought Microsoft stock either at all in any way, shape, or form. Of course, I lost my ass on it yesterday, as I did on the Tesla stock I bought a while back. lost yesterday. But anyway.
Well, no, you'll only lose when I get in. Trust me. As soon as I get in, the bottom will friggin' drop out. So I'll stay away because I love you.
Well, listen, Mary Meeker did her big Internet Trends report.
Nobody should ever put together a 164-page slide deck.
Okay, so TechCrunch.
Ever.
TechCrunch has the most important insights from her trend report linked in that article, and I'll put a direct link in the show notes. But if you've ever seen, I've seen her present this twice, and it makes perfect sense and it's incredible. So I'm going to actually look for video of her actually presenting it. Have you guys seen
it? I just
any?
Put it in the show notes.
Oh, great. Good.
Recode did it because that's the event that owns the video. That was, their event, the Code conference where she presented. So, yep, they posted it.
Good.
Yeah, there's nothing exciting here, though.
No, I thought it was, I don't know.
I mean, kind of boring.
Mobile.
It was 106. Mobile advertising is an opportunity. People aren't spending as much time with print yet. Advertising is still going into print.
But you know what, though, is when you look at stuff like her analysis of the smartphone market and how it's slowing, because it's reaching a level of saturation. And then
we all knew that was going to happen.
Well, and the phones aren't improving that much.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not a real reason to upgrade.
But I think this is important because, I mean, stuff like, you know, internet advertising grew 16% this year. Well, I don't follow that space closely. What's the split between internet ads and mobile ads?
We have this guy on our Binnovate gang. He knows that shit backwards and forwards. That's what he does.
I eat it for breakfast every day.
There you go.
Lots of mobile advertising.
Mary Elliott.
And boy, is it tasty.
But I should point out facts of note that TechCrunch pointed out was that BuzzFeed is enjoying a meteoric rise.
Yeah. So that's tripling its
unique visitors.
Oh, wow.
Should point out that BuzzFeed is a HyperIQ client. Thank you very much. Good night.
There you go. Plug.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. But I'm sorry. Nobody. Ever 164 slides.
I have to say, she's really a master at PowerPoint charts, though.
She's got it down, probably
from Excel, but anyway, they're really well done.
She's the master at the charts and numbers for sure. She'll make your brain ache, you know, watching one of those things.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I'm a big fan of Mary Meeker. It's not an easy job to, you know, track something that has such spikes like technology does. When you're in this growth mode rather than this huge transition mode, you know, you're slowly growing. It's hard to come up with exciting stuff year after year after year.
Unfortunately, they didn't have a lot of huge news out of the Code event. It was okay, but it was a lot of the same old, and it didn't really break any big news.
Yeah, well, maybe next time she could do it as a musical. That seems
there you go.
A musical.
Oh, man.
Oh, brother.
Come on. Go with it.
All right.
It could be a weekly series.
Yeah, could be.
Could be.
Have we got to the opportunity to talk a little bit about, the thing that we do
with that
the sound?
Could there be?
Steve's security tip of the week.
Is that what time it is? Oh,
that's what time.
All right. Geez, I was kind of sleeping here. Just a sec. Oh, okay. This is there was a really great article in Ars Technica that a guy wrote. And Ars Technica is kind of a geeky site if you haven't been there for a while. The guy's name is Cyrus Farivar, and he did this thing. Now this article was written March 30th of 14. And I'd actually read it before, and then I reread it as I was thinking about this. It's about what your metadata really shows about you. And so it's not just the metadata about your phone and usage and location and all those sorts of things that matter, but also the IP address that's delivered by your device. It's really fascinating if you take a look at the fact that your internet connection is a digital fingerprint, and this is yet another reason why it's a good idea to use a virtual private network, a VPN service. And I put a page together about what's going on with your IP address. And so I wasn't using my VPN, and I went to Steve Gibson, who does the Security Now podcast with Leo Laporte, without my VPN connected. And he has this page called Shields Up, you know, like the old Star Trek thing, to protect yourself. And it shows your IP address. And then also after my VPN and the fact that there wasn't anything showing. Now, you may say, so what? Well, people are putting in ghostery and privacy badger from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And they've got do not track set up and all of that. All of that's great because it doesn't specify your specific activities in a browser. But if you're coming out from the same IP, everything that's being examined can be attached to that particular IP. And Comcast, in my case, they log everything. They log 100% of everything done, and they're playing part of the keeping it for 7 years role of the log files. And so for 7 years, because I've had them for a long time, that means everything that's come out of the IP address at this house has been collected in log files. So
yeah, it's a good backup for the NSA.
It is, in case something happens out in Utah.
Right, right. And they can say, hey, Comcast, what has Steve Morsch been up to? Oh, right over here. No problem.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, and it is funny because every once in a while I've gone and done naked searching, you know, where I reset Safari as my browser and I use Google. And my wife was out looking at plate patterns because we were going to buy new dinnerware. And I was getting ads about dinnerware, you know, various things in the Google search. She had come down and says, hey, go look at such and such a pattern. And I typed it in Google and did a search on it. And they were starting to show me ads. Now that could be because of that particular thing, but the ads were related to that exact manufacturer of that exact, dinnerware pattern. And the only way that that could have happened was they were doing behavioral targeting of the IP address coming out of my house. So anyway, my tip is, use your VPN and actually turn it on, even if you're at home.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
You have to have your tinfoil hat on as well? Or is that
you
just
go
like
ahead, you optional? Go ahead. You know, everybody teased me about wearing a tinfoil hat until Edward Snowden started his revelations, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, you don't have a tinfoil hat. You're still paranoid as hell, but you don't have a tinfoil hat on. I just, you know what? At the end of the day, I don't want to die and have my kids, you know, be under a potential fascist president or something, you know.
And we're not right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I knew that would get a laugh out of Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Rim shot.
Yeah. No, I just
worse than that, Tim.
there just needs to be balance. And more importantly, people just need to know what's going on. Because you know what? You may very well decide, I don't really care. I don't care. Because I'm not doing it. I'm not looking up, you know, how to make bombs or stuff like that. So it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. But
at least they know what's going on. I have people in my family even who are just so freaked out about, you know, phishing online and e-commerce and whether or not security is good and so on. They just don't shop online at all.
Hmm.
They just don't do it. It's like, I'm just not going to
say
do
no.
It.
Yeah. An answer-taking approach.
Yeah. Yep. So yep.
With this page you have on Minovate, your digital fingerprint or super cookie looks very good. When did you publish this?
Last night.
I'm going to plus my super cookie down this right after the podcast.
There you go.
I'm on a diet, so I got to stay away from my super cookie. But
kidders.
That's right.
You're just kidders.
All right,
I know my role.
Yeah, what's coming up?
Well, let's see. This is right up Graham's alley. The investors fundraising in the digital economy. EduCelerate comes up on the 3rd of June. I'm sorry, that's the 1st. On the 3rd of June is EduCelerate.
And are you going Twin to Cities? That, by the way?
Which
part
one?
Of your EduCelerate as part of your technology advising?
I am unable to attend at this point in time. But
okay,
you never know, though.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And then the Integrated Marketing Summit, which is that a MEMA related event, or is MEMA involved in that? I guess it's an independent.
I think it is. I actually got a mailing, emailing about. I thought it was MEMA related, but maybe not.
I think they're helping promote it or something. Maybe. I think it's almost a roadshow kind of a thing that's going to different cities around the country.
Oh.
See, the other one we don't have in our list, but the IO event is coming up, that maybe next week. You know that one they hold at the Walker?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
June. Yeah, we should plug that in.
I'll look that up and find it. Okay. Okay. And then Twin Cities Geekettes, which is really a great organization of ladies who are geeks, is doing an intro to Agile on June 10th, and we've got a link in the show notes for that.
Nice.
And it's a great spot to go in and learn is what their focus is. And then Hack for MN at the Nerdery. I hadn't heard about this, but
yeah, I got a mailing on this week, so I put it in. It's the National Day of Hacking,
mm-hmm.
Civic
for
hacking. So
right?
so it's taking government data and then putting like-minded people in the same place, and then hopefully coming up with some applications. Our new technologies.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Mini Analytics is a sponsor of that as well. So they're helping to promote it. My friend Dan Atkins. So that sounds like a good one. And then a couple days after that, Treehouse Health is holding its first free educational event for entrepreneurs on the topic of business formation and hiring. That's an afternoon event.
Now, is that for businesses that have yet to start up, or ones that are in the process?
I certainly think it's both,
okay.
and all are welcome. I mean, it doesn't have to be a healthcare startup. You don't have to be a healthcare startup to attend it. And they have a service provider group of service providers that will be presenting at the event, a law firm and an accounting firm will get into the legal issues. And it's just going to be a brief event. It's only a two-hour event or so, so it isn't like a deep dive. But it'll be a good networking event, too, at the Treehouse Health Facility at Loring Office Building.
Yep, great, great facility.
Yes, it is, yep.
And then the Cybersecurity Summit is coming up on October 21st, and so I – I have to order my new tinfoil hat before that happens.
Yeah. With your name on it. With Hello, my name is.
That will draw people from all over,
that's,
right?
That's right.
So did you hear about the new keynote speaker, Steve?
No.
Edward Snowden.
Oh, that's right, because Ted Kaczynski's in the prison.
Yeah, right.
For all your kids at home, Ted Kaczynski. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, never mind. put a link in the show notes, Wilson.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, there will be lots of things to cover and talk about next week. So we'll be sure to catch you up on that, because it'll be another week of
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yes, sir.
Right. Take care, boys.